know to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some loving here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see, oh, what's going on. Everybody thinks we're at home. Oh, but who are they to judge us simply 'cause our hair is long? Oh, you know that we've got to find a way. Bring some understanding here today. Oh, oh, oh. Picket lines and picket signs. Punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me so you can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on.
Right, right on, right on.
Wind down, Marvin Gaye. What's going on? What's going on? That's a good question for me today. What's going on? There's a lot going on. You're listening to Recovery Radio down in beautiful Harpers Ferry, Bolivar, West Virginia, right next to Harpers Ferry. I dare you to try and find it. Beautiful down here, though. Yes, good morning. You're listening to Recovery Radio this morning, and I am your host, James Boyd, just full of excitement and fire today. We're getting closer and closer to the primary elections, and people are getting excited and motivated, and so I kind of like that. And our topic this morning, in relation to the question that Mr. Gay was asking, what's going on? What's going on with your progress? With your progress. This is Recovery Radio. I'm hoping that my good friend Celine will be calling me very shortly so that we can have a conversation about progress in recovery. And what are you doing? What have you been doing? How are you measuring your progress? How are you tracking your progress? What are the steps that you're taking? What are the things that you are gravitating to in your progress? And what are the things that you need to get rid of? What are some of the stepping stones? Or what are the barriers that we can talk about this morning? Yeah, and we're coming to you live. If you want to listen to the show live this morning, right at this instant, you can go to www.enlightenedradio.org. That's www.enlightenedradio.org. enlighten.org. And listen,
by the way,
to
that's enlighten, not enlightened.
Oh, enlighten.
Enlighten.
Yeah, we have
dot,
to.
It's like enlighten radio.
Yeah, you know, in the cyber world, I was trying to do emails and all of that. If you get that stuff wrong, it'll bounce back.
So it doesn't go anywhere.
It doesn't go anywhere at all. Yeah.
So anyway, just
tune in, because we're talking about progress this morning in recovery, and how are you doing? How are people doing? How they're faring? I'm excited this morning so that we can talk about the progress that we're making in the recovery community. We're talking about the opioid addiction and the process of getting yourself established in a wholesome and healthy environment, so that you can list your accomplishments in recovery. You can take pictures of the activities you can now do. There were lots of things that I could not do early on in recovery, a lot of places that I couldn't go because, certain things, certain behaviors would kick in. But now I don't worry about that stuff too much. I try to pass on my blessings. So we're talking this morning a lot about, I want to go to the Facebook pages that spark a lot of these conversations around addiction, and the methods that we're using, are they good for us in terms of how we are treating ourselves and what behaviors are we displaying? This morning, I want to talk about the Pontifex unit, and it's the teaching tool. Yeah, we got a caller coming in this morning. Yeah, I'm happy to. Good morning, caller. Are you there?
Yeah, good morning. This is Salim.
Good morning, Salim. How are you down in Texas this morning? How's the weather? Yeah, I know you. How close are you to the cows and the ranchers and everything? Go ahead, Salim. How close are you to your...
It was yesterday.
Yeah. I didn't catch that.
You.
Things are good. How's your family?
Everybody good in yours?
Mine is good. Salim, we're going to be talking about progress this morning. Tell us about some of the progress that you've made in your life since you stopped using substance, heroin and cocaine and misery. What kind of progress have you made that you can talk to us about this morning?
Well, you know, man, since I stopped there, I didn't graduate from college, but I did go and get me a 1-year college. Mm-hmm. I did that. And I had various jobs. The best job I had, I worked for Ford Motors. I did that for about 9 years. I worked for Ford Motors.
How did you like that? How did you like Ford Motor? That was a kind of a good job. What area?
Well, that was down in Edison, New Jersey.
And you did that for how many years?
I did that for 9 years down the Ford.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I've been married to my wife now for 20 years.
Oh, congratulations.
I've been married to her for 20 years. And then I'm in the process of trying to buy me a home down in Georgia.
Yeah, well, good luck with that. Good luck with that. That's pretty good progress for somebody to start thinking about buying a home after that many years of active addiction and then prison on top of that. Tell me a little bit about, I know some of these things, but, you know, for our listening audience and people who don't really know who you are or who I am, tell us how you first came to recovery. You know, I know you did something that was kind of disciplined, and I'd like to call it a spiritual awakening. Can you tell us about that? Because something spiritual happened in your life. Is that right?
You know, I just had came home from what happened, man?
Can you speak up?
I had. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I had a warrant on me from Jersey.
Mm-hmm. A warrant?
Yeah, a warrant. I'm trying to think. It wasn't for robbery. It was for... it was for possession.
Mm-hmm. Possession of...
So when I came home from New York,
what would you have possession of? What?
I had possession of heroin.
Okay.
And I was over on 116th Street and 8th Avenue in New York. And man, I have been over there for about 3-4 days. And
okay, let's back up a little bit, because I'm interested in what you said just now about being over there. Where were you for 3 or 4 days?
I was over there in Harlem.
In Harlem.
And on 116th Street and 8th Avenue.
Okay, so when you say you were there for 3 or 4 days, what were you doing for those 3 or 4 days?
It was 3-4 days. I was shooting heroin.
Shooting heroin.
And,
for 3 or 4 days. Yeah. And you lived in New Jersey, right? Newark.
Yeah, I lived in Newark.
So you were in Newark, and you went to Harlem, and you stayed in Harlem for 2 or 3 days, and you shot dope.
Yeah, I stayed over there about 4 days. I'm going to say 4 days.
Okay.
Because you remember the hotel that used to be on 116th Street?
I do.
Avenue.
I do.
A hotel right there on the corner.
I do. Uh-huh. And what did you go? Okay, 116th Street and 8th Avenue, a hotel on the corner. Why would you go? Was it the Hilton?
No, man. You know, that
what was the name of that hotel?
That was a shooting gallery.
It was a shooting gallery, like shooting ducks.
Okay, let me put it more clear. It wasn't a shooting gallery like with guns. It was where you go and shoot your heroin.
Okay.
Your heroin.
Okay, it was a safe place to inject, allegedly safe.
Well, it was, yeah, you can say allegedly safe, because...
Tell me, Celine, so we're going to paint a picture. Wait a minute, Celine, let's do this right. We're going to paint a picture. Okay, so you get to the hotel door, as I remember. Take us from the door to the shooting gallery upstairs. How'd you get in?
Oh, man, you know, downstairs is where, in front of the building is where they always sold mostly all the drugs at, right there on that corner.
Okay.
So, okay, you would buy your drugs, you would go upstairs. Now, if you didn't have your own needles, you was in trouble.
But as I recall, you had to pay somebody to go upstairs, right? Wasn't there a gentleman
that's what I'm saying. See, you had to pay at the door to go upstairs to shoot.
Right.
But you had. Okay, now if you got upstairs and you didn't have your own needles, then you had to pay the guy for the needles, and he didn't want no money. Basically, the guy would charge you some money and some of your drugs. So what I would always do, I always kept my own set, which is my own needles.
Uh-huh.
And this particular day, I went upstairs, and I had got me some, I think I got me some Blue Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with Frank Lucas was selling.
Frank Lucas.
Yeah. And I went upstairs, I shot that drug, and man, they robbed me because I got so high, I didn't even know where I was at.
And you got robbed.
They robbed me, they took my coat. They took my coat, they took my little bit of dope I had left, they took my little bit of money. And when I woke up, because I woke up leaning over a radiator.
Oh, so you went out?
Yeah, I went out.
Okay.
And so you remember the brother named Spoon?
Yeah, I remember Spoon.
Okay. Well, I ain't have any more money. Spoon gave me some money to get back home. I came back home to North. I didn't know that the police had been to the house looking for me, but my wife and her girlfriend was there. And so a knock came on the door. I snuck into the house by the back window because I didn't know if they was watching the house. But I didn't know. I always come in the back window because my landlady set me up one time before. So I came into the house, and I slept underneath the bed. Because wasn't no room for me in the bed with my wife and her girlfriend, because we lived in a studio.
Mm-hmm.
And that morning, a knock came on the door, and the police came in, and they had the whole building surrounded. I don't know how they knew I was in there, but he told me, he said, Jeff, you can come on from underneath the bed. So I came from underneath the bed. They locked me up down at the county jail, downtown Newark. I laid down there for, I stayed in there. That was during the time that Elijah Muhammad was passing in March. Mm-hmm. And I stayed down there in the county jail going through withdrawals for about 40 days. I laid down the bed down there for about 40 days. And I went through that withdrawal. From there, I was sent to another prison called Bordentown. And I stayed down Bordentown 4 years. And I did my full recovery down in Bordentown. But what really happened that made me really get myself together is that my wife's girlfriend told her that, you know, that he ain't going to be nothing but a dope fiend when he come back home, so you might as well go ahead on and marry this other guy and divorce him. Well, that's exactly what she did. So my thing was, if she thought that I was going to be a dope fiend when I come home, I need to prove her wrong. And ever since then, in 1975, I've been proving her wrong.
1975, man. Somebody going to mess around and do that in days. 1975, 2018. That's pretty good, Celine. So tell me some of the progress you made after you decided to prove them wrong over the years. What are some of the initial steps that you took to stay stopped?
Well, you know what I did? Right. I changed. Well, you know me, I've always did hang around with you and everybody else. But what I did, I just stopped using. We were still friends and we still hung out, but I would never use anymore because I knew I had to prove her wrong. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want her to think that, see, it took him a few years, but he went back to his old self. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't going to allow that to happen. I came out. I made sure I wasn't a guy that worked on jobs. So I made sure I got me a job. And I learned the trade of how to make mattresses. So that's one of the trades I have. Also, I was a mattress maker.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed on my jobs, did what I had to do for myself, and kept myself out of trouble.
Mm-hmm. So actually, you sounded like you were pretty angry at your first wife for the accusations that were slung against you.
I don't know if I was angry because she did me a favor.
That's what I was getting ready to allude to. Yeah. I was going to say that.
Yeah.
That I believe, this is what I think. I read a book by a gentleman, Mr. Peter Westbrook. He's an Olympic fencer. Yeah. And he wrote a book called Harnessing the Anger. And matter of fact, he's from Newark and grew up down in Prince Street Projects. He had a black father and a Japanese mother, Peter Westbrook. And he wrote a book called Harnessing the Anger because he was such an angry young man that his instructor, his sensei, told him to take that same anger and use it to propel yourself above all of the rest of the nonsense, the failure, and just propel yourself above that. And he did that, and he became an Olympic champion right now today. He's into fencing. But Salim, it sounds to me like, from what I know about your journey, because you went into martial arts, right? How did that help? How did that help?
Well, that was a different type of discipline that I learned downtown Newark. I think I started when I was 32,
mm-hmm.
and I went all the way till I was about 41.
Yeah, so 32 was a long way away from your initial release from Bordentown, because I remember when you stopped. And you stopped coming around a lot. And, you know, those of us who were still using, such as myself, we noticed the change in you.
You know, I did change. What I did, you guys were still my friends. and everything as we are today. But I knew that in order for me to be successful, I had to really get away from being hanging out with y'all when it came time for y'all to go get high. I would always head in the opposite direction.
Yeah, but we got some of your money out of your hand, though, didn't we?
Yeah, because see, what I didn't want to do is, I didn't want to see y'all shoot up. I didn't want to be reminded. I didn't want to test myself as a, you know, to see if I was strong enough to say, oh, I can be around it and don't use it. So I said, no, the best thing for me is don't be around it. Because, you know, like when I came home from prison, my mother said to me, she said, son, come on, have a drink with me. I said, oh, no, mama, I don't drink no more. She said, oh, this is mama, you know, just one little drink. And I said, no, mama, I won't drink. So she went in the kitchen and pulled a drink for her and me. And I said, oh, mama, I'm going to have to disappoint you with this. I said, because I don't drink no more. And my mother was only testing me to see if I would even have a drink of wine, because she didn't drink alcohol. She was drinking wine. Mm-hmm. So I didn't drink that. And I knew then if I was refusing my mother, I'm going to be able to refuse everything else. Mm-hmm. And that's how I made my progress.
Well, you know, that is beautiful. That's such a testimony, and it's in line with the conversation on social media about the Narcotics Anonymous and the Alcoholics Anonymous, and then the spiritual piece is kind of in conflict a little
here's
bit.
Here's another thing, and I'm not saying this is not for everybody, because this is not for me. I never use alcohol or NA or Drug Anonymous or any other anonymous to help me with my addiction or kicking my habit. I'm going to put it like that.
But if you start to unwrap your journey, in my mind, the principles of those groups, you used each one because, everything that you have said in terms of how you backed away and you took control of your life are the things that those organizations teach. They endorse those principles. So I believe that most of us who are in long-term recovery, we want the same things out of life, and that's long-term recovery. We want to see people survive and to stay in recovery, but the path that you choose basically leads to one place, and that's sobriety. I applaud you in your testimony, because I know that it's true and it's valid, because I've been knowing you since you were a pup. If I can say that.
Yeah, man. And I was talking to my sister the other day about talking about what we talk about. And for the first time in almost 40 years, she tells me that
Hold on, Salim. I got another caller. Another caller is coming in. Another caller is coming online, Salim. Can you hold? Caller, are you there? Good morning. How are you? this is Raheem, another compadre. You guys are faithful. We're gonna help some people. Uh-huh. We're gonna help some people get into recovery. How you doing, Raheem?
I'm good, my brother. How are you?
I'm just fine. We've got Salim on the line along with you. We're talking about progress today. Go ahead, okay. Salim. Or maybe hold up, Salim, back off. Let's let Raheem chime in. What's the progress that you've made since you got sober, Raheem?
Oh man, I made good progress, brother. You know, since I've been sober, you know, my life has been completely blessed. You know, I myself have been completely blessed.
That's all right. You go ahead. You're a comedian. That's a good word. We're gonna make. If Donald Trump can say "kufifi," then you can say.
I was looking out the window at this young girl, and it made me think of breasts, chicken breasts. Yeah. No, let me stop.
No, that's all right. Hey, Raheem, tell me, what are some of the disciplines that you used when you?
But
answer the question, man.
Taking care of business, man. You know, and. Doing things that I'm supposed to, my bills is paid, you know, my kids are all right. Well, they grown now, but they still all right. And yeah, I'm doing good, man. My health is good.
Okay.
And, did they, you know.
Did they do a psych eval on you?
Huh?
Did they do a psych eval on you?
Who?
Whoever you want to see. Tell him, Selene. Selene, are you there?
Yeah.
Did they do a psych eval on you as well?
No.
Well, they did one on me. Why you guys scared to fess up? You know some doctor had to sit you down and say something to you.
No, I'm telling you, man. See, I'm telling you that when I was down in prison, I'm telling you, man. I got kicked out of the drug program.
Why was that?
Because down in Bordentown, because I wouldn't sit down and talk the kind of talk that they did. And here's one of the things that happened in prison. They would tell the guys, when you get out of prison, don't worry about certain things. We got you. So I said, then what you mean you got them? They would say, well, if they got into trouble, we would come and get them. I said, what you're doing is telling them that it's okay to go to drugs because you can get back. Mm-hmm. And man, I argued with them. They put me out of the drug program. And here's what happened.
So they were telling you that, wait, let me understand something. Let me understand something, Selene. So they were saying to you that relapse is definitely a part of recovery. Is that, explain that to me. Is that what you just said? You said they were telling you what now?
They were telling the inmates that was in prison down in Bordentown that if you got into trouble out on the streets, when you get back on the streets, don't worry, we will come and be an assistant to you. I told them that what you're saying now is that you're telling them, go out and use drugs, we got you.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, that's not how I want to be. And so they put me out of the program.
But when because what? Program, you were in denial or something?
Who, me?
That's what they were saying.
Well, no, they didn't say I was in denial. They said that I was non-conformative.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I wasn't conforming to the rules. I would never take a key and let them know that I left the floor. Everything I went up there on that program to do, I was going to do it just to get out of prison and go before the
parole
board. But when I got there,
you want to make sure it looked good when you went up for parole.
Yeah, but what happened, I got kicked out of the program, and the parole board gave me another 11-month hit. I stood up, and I literally told the parole board, you know what? I ain't going to do nothing, and y'all can kiss me. You know where the sun don't shine. I said, because after this 11 months, I don't have to answer to no parole officer and nobody else on the street. I'm going to do this myself. Mm-hmm. And so I did my other time.
You went on and maxed it out, right?
I went on and maxed out.
Okay. So that's a bold step. So what about you, Raheem? What are some of the progressive things that you did to make sure you stayed on the straight and narrow after you decided to stop using? What are some of the progressive things that you did?
I was just, man, you know, my kids and stuff, and just thinking positive, keeping it straight ahead, man. And I was to go back, but let me reiterate on that. When I got out, I did make a flip flop and started getting high again.
Mm-hmm.
I did start. Hanging with y'all guys, man. Y'all was bad influence on me. But anyway, when I got locked up that second time and they were going to violate me and I was going to have to bring that whole time back, I was like, oh, no. But the way they did it was that they messed up. because I was going to the well, you know, the new well where Specs, mm-hmm. he had the drug program. And one of the counselors mixed up my urine. So that means my urine came back dirty. Mm-hmm. But when I left the new well, I went straight up to my parole officer, and he made me take a urine. Mm-hmm. So when the results come back, it came back clean. But he got the results from the well, and they violated me and locked me up. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling them that I didn't use no drugs. I haven't been using.
Yeah, that I think that happens a lot.
Then when
the,
I thought of,
yeah,
yeah,
the drug
I thought
programs.
About it. I said, wait a minute. I took a urine at the well, and then when I left there, I went to the parole board, and I took a urine the same day, maybe about 15, 10, 20 minutes apart. If anything, the parole board, I mean, the parole urine should have been dirty, too. So when they weighed that out, they were like, yeah, well, right here on the specimen, it said he took a urine at 7:30, 8 o'clock, something like that. And then about 9-something, he took a urine at the parole office, which came back positive, I mean negative. Mm-hmm. So how could that be? I can't clean my systems out in no 15 minutes. So the parole officer said, "This something don't make sense here." I said, no, the drug program made a mistake.
And so how long
I
ago
said,
was,
they made
how
a
long
mistake
was that, Raheem?
And put my name on a wrong, but yeah. See, the counselor there.
Let me ask you something, Raheem.
You know, wait a minute. The counselor there, me and him had a little beef because he was trying to backstab me, and I wasn't having it with my wife. You know, well, you know. But anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So how'd that make you feel? I mean, when you got that situation
but anyway,
corrected.
You know, they reinstated me, mm-hmm. and I came home that same day. You know.
Okay.
But after that. That was it, you yeah. know, and it just made me go straight forward, man, you know, straight
that's,
forward.
That's a good thing, man. That is a real good thing.
You know.
I want to ask you something. Let's talk a minute about something that I found to be, I don't know, something we can all relate to because we were all there. You remember at Miss Dot's funeral and Peanuts sung that song? We were down at...
Huh?
Were you there? Raheem was there with Miss Dot's funeral, right? Were you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Remember when your brother sung that song about Boys to Men?
Miss Dot's funeral?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there.
I know. Was Miss Lorraine there?
She was my mom's, man. She was like, that was our other mother. Just like my mother, Miss Dot, your mother, John and Bill's mom, they was all our mothers, man. Yeah. You know, we was all family.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That was pretty good.
Yeah. So, what you gonna say about when Jaleem started singing?
Oh, yeah. That was really.
Yeah,
good.
You should tell. Yeah. Wait a minute.
Uh oh. Here we go.
Daul,
what?
You should tell them that you got up. You hear what he's saying? Start crying. It got everybody else crying in the building.
No. Hey.
You got
Jaleem. Daul forgot where he was. He thought he was at a concert. Yeah, Jaleem, sing that song, brother. Sing it. And he started crying. Then everybody started crying.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we got to have a big party, man. We're going to have recovery radio all over the place. Yeah, so... I certainly appreciate
you guys. Yeah, he stood up and started clapping.
The bad part about it was I was high.
Yeah. I love you, man. I love you, brother. I remember.
He
cheered my brother on, man, and then my brother really got into the song.
Oh, yeah, he really sung then. So I brought that up. I brought that up for a reason, you know. I think...
Yeah, everybody in there crying, man.
Yeah,
even the preacher was crying.
Yeah, we ought to get Jaleem back, man. We ought to get him back.
I've been trying to reach out.
That's all right. We're going to keep doing
it. Like I said, man, you can take the horse to the water. You can't make him drink it. I'm here anytime, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, I know how you make him drink.
But, right now I'm not going to get into that, you know, for personal reasons.
Yeah.
But My door is open 24/7, 365 days a year. Man.
You ought to make sure he hears the broadcast. Go find him, or either find
you
out what his phone number is, and we can text it, put it on his phone.
I think he's talking about this broadcast.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh.
This particular broadcast.
Oh.
To get it straight to him.
I think he's talking about make sure you try to hit this particular broadcast, you know, so that he can call in. Same thing with Tutan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the same thing with Tutan, because I haven't been able to reach him in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And everything.
Mm-hmm. But recovery is intentional, wouldn't you say? It's intentional.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
What are some of the intentionalities that you applied to your life, Celine, when you started making progress? What are some of the things that you did intentionally? Because I know you became somewhat of a health nut, I guess you call it. You became very health conscious with your food and all of that. Is that right?
Well, that too. But then I embraced the Islam after that, and then after I embraced Islam, and I'm gonna say something here, because I did slip and start drinking, and that's because I met my wife I'm with now is my third wife.
Mm-hmm.
When I met my second wife, her and her mother, they were more, you know, party-type people. Now, I started drinking, but I would never shoot the drugs anymore. And then I said, oh, man, if this woman find out, meeting my first wife, that I'm drinking, and I become an alcoholic, she'll say, see, he didn't use drugs no more, he used alcohol. So you know what I did?
What's that?
I said, that's it with the drinking.
Mm-hmm. And you just stopped. I've always known you to be somewhat of an extremist anyway, Salim.
Yeah.
What do you think, Raheem?
Huh?
You think Salim is somewhat an extremist?
Raheem knows, because I used to come around way right.
I know you too.
That over there and get getting drunk over there with me and my other brother.
Oh, so you was creeping. You was creeping. Huh? You was creeping, huh?
Well, but that's what I'm trying to tell you. See, and then when it dawned on me what I was doing to myself, I was no longer using the drugs. I started drinking, and then I started saying, man, I went from drinking Hennessy and Remy Martin and all of that top shelf stuff, man, to drinking I don't know what my brother was giving me in this cheap old drinking beer and everything, man. I was top shelf guy, man, but then
so you was a top shelf guy. Wait a minute, let me plug something. So you were a top shelf guy and when you were drinking, so that's like that's like the snorter telling the shooter, you know, I don't shoot dope, I just snort. So I'm much better than you are. That's kind of what that sounds
might be
like.
So, but you know, the so-called top shelf people was the people who snorted cocaine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the cocaine.
Yeah, they be drinking and snorting.
But is one better than the other?
And so they thought that the cocaine people, because you know that's how some of them brothers over there that we know, I don't want to put their business out right now, but you know, some of those brothers, man, they knew, because when they was over there on Wall Street and down there at some of them other jobs, man, making $90,000, $100,000 way back during our time, they were snorting cocaine.
Yeah, because cocaine is better than heroin.
Big time.
Right?
Big time.
Cocaine is better. Is that another kind of addiction? Is that a better addiction, or is it basically
that's
the same?
Ain't none of them good. Ain't none of them good.
Well, y'all.
But I'm gonna say it like this.
Y'all here. Said that in you unison.
Remember,
ain't none of them good.
You remember, Daoud, when me and you was underneath my stand.
What
over there? we were shooting some
opium.
Opium. No, we were shooting
that opium. That was me, you, and Daoud.
That was all three of us underneath my stairs shooting that opium over there because we had to land out of drugs.
When we came back home with the shakes?
Yeah.
Everybody
Whoa,
was shaking.
Man, I brought that stuff around, man.
Everybody was shaking.
I went up my girl's house, man. Next thing you know, I got the shaking and trembling in my head. I'm like, oh, she's like, what's wrong with you? I'm calling your mother. My mother brought me home in a cab, but check this out. My mother brought me home in a cab. I'm pulling up in front of the house on 10th Street in the cab, who walking around the corner shivering like it was like 2 degrees outside for Celine. My mother said, what's wrong with you? He's like, I don't know. I don't feel good. You know, he went upstairs and I got the shakes. So she's like, what y'all get a hold to? Mm-hmm. Like nothing. Nothing. You know, must have been something I ate. Or I don't know what I told her. But yeah, I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
We going to be. No, nah, but no, nah, wait a minute, though. Slade.
Hey, yeah.
No, let's tell Dao the truth. Dao, you know what happened?
What?
Me and Celine backtracked and tried to be slick.
That's what clean the cooker. Clean the cooker.
We seen where you stashed it at. So we waited until you split. And we both.
Oh.
Celine was there first.
Well, that was $5,000 worth of stuff y'all used up. I need my money.
He's like, yo, man. He said, don't say nothing. I'm fixing up for both of us. We both go trying to sneak back and get some.
And got sick.
And that second trip did it. Okay. I wish I had never snuck back there, boy. That shit messed me up.
Well, let's get back. Wait. Let's get back to this payment method.
Because
there's no statute of limitations on that. I need $2,000 from each one of y'all for the stuff that y'all took and used unauthorized.
But you know what, man? You know what the best part about it, Salim Dao?
What's that?
That we could sit here and talk about it, man.
And laugh about it. That's true.
And each time we talk about it, it makes us stronger, and we might be helping somebody.
Oh, I'm sure we are. I am sure we are, because you all touched on some things, some conversations that are going on social media as to the pathway to recovery in a person's life. And I think for me, it's a personal journey. You know, it had to be personal, you know, because my sponsor talks about.
And it's a beautiful thing that you came out with this here program, man.
Mm. And well, that goes by God's grace and a man named John Case.
You know, helping people. Instead of getting people hooked on it, you're trying to help people get off of it. And that's beautiful.
Yeah.
And then you bring your lifelong friends in to help you out.
Yeah.
And that's even more beautiful, man.
Well, anybody
that's in the range of, listening to us, we just want to know that, hey,
that you're all right.
If anything we can do to help y'all, or anything we say or can say to help you make a decision to stay off drugs, then give Brother Dao a shout out. James Boyd.
Yeah.
Give him a shout out.
And you know what? And what he just said from the beginning, too, he said it starts with intentions.
Mm-hmm. You have to be intentional.
You see, and a person has to start by saying to themselves what they're not going to do. In other words, when you wake up in the morning, don't reach for drugs and don't even reach for a cigarette.
For real.
You know, reach for something saying that, you know what, today is the day that I put that nonsense and drugs behind me. Mm-hmm. Today, I'm going to do something for me.
Right.
Yeah, well,
yeah. I'm not asking nobody else to do. I'm asking myself to do this for me, and that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
When I stopped smoking, I listened to what Malcolm said. He said, "When you go to the bathroom, put the cigarette in your mouth and look in the mirror and say fire on one end and food on the other."
Fire on one end and fool on the other.
And I pulled that cigarette three times, and I repeated those words. When I put that cigarette down, it was also in March of 1975. And I never smoked since then.
Amen, brother. Me too, Celine.
Yeah.
I stopped.
Yep.
I stopped.
But you know what?
Go ahead.
You know, now you said far as one drug habit was worse than the other. And I said, no, all of them is bad. Because Celine made a nice statement what he just said as far as cigarettes. Cigarettes, smoking, that's a habit. That ain't good. Drinking becomes a habit. That ain't good. Because it does, it mess up your liver. Cigarette causes cancer, mess up your teeth, everything else. Drugs, that ain't good. That messes up everything in your body. You know, that's just like a person that have a soda addiction. All that acid and all that that they put in sodas is not good for you. So any kind of addiction is not good.
Yeah. And let me add this. Let me add this also, because now there's something, a medically assisted treatment, and I want to get your feel about that. If you have any knowledge of it, medical assisted. When we were coming through there, it was methadone. They came methadone maintenance. Yeah. Now they have stuff, something called Suboxone, Vivitrol shots, or some other things. And I kind of endorse that. I really endorse that because of the current state of affairs. You can't even get a person's attention until you get them well. And by well, I mean when they're not dope sick. So what they're using now
You said you endorse that you
submit it on? No, medically assisted treatment.
Okay.
It's called MAT.
How you defining that?
Yeah, it's called MAT. Take a look at it, because you come back on, we're going to be talking about that, because that is one of the things that the medical community are embracing, because if you know that when we were getting high and scratching and nodding, you couldn't get our attention to listen to anything that has anything to do with recovery. They had to get your attention first. And the thing that got your attention, I believe, Celine, is prison. It's caught up in prison. It's caught up in the idea that your wife made a statement. And Raheem, what got your attention to stop?
What, far as stop getting high?
Yeah.
My kids.
Okay.
My kids.
See, so
when
so,
my son walked in the living room and seen me nodded out in a plate of spaghetti, yeah, and he was like, and then like, mom, daddy's asleep, and his face is in his food.
So that must.
I mean, you know, I seen, you know. That was it. That
got
was
your
it,
attention.
Man. I was
well,
like,
see, that's,
wow.
That's a good thing. So if you,
my son shouldn't have seen nothing like that.
Yeah. So if you, know, if you,
she didn't tell him what was wrong with me.
Listen.
You know, she just said that, you know, your father probably tired from working.
Oh, she lied.
I went in the bathroom, looked in the mirror, and said, no, I ain't tired from working. I'm sitting in there high, so high that I ain't realized that I nodded out in my food, man.
Yeah.
And I just decided, man, enough is enough.
Yeah. Well, good.
Enough
for you,
is
man.
Enough.
Good
I can't. I can't miss my kids growing up.
And I find that is a blessing for you and I, and Salim at this time, because the product that is being used is so synthetic now that it's hard to get a person's attention if they are in withdrawal of any kind. It's hard to get their attention. So
yeah,
what they're
they
using
hear,
because the
that.
Prison system
all they're thinking about is getting high.
Getting high. Well, it's a physical addiction that's
about finding that
on steroids now.
Or whatever they, you know.
It's a physical addiction. But it's a physical addiction that's much
all
worse.
All the programs, man, methadone and all this other medically and do stuff to help you. I don't agree with that, because It's just another drug, man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about money. It's all about the government making money. Medicaid paying for your program, Medicare, whatever they paying for your program, insurance paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still getting high.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people that's on that methadone, you look at them.
Yeah.
They look the same way they did when they were shooting dope.
because the methadone is an opiate.
Yeah. Okay. It's an opiate blocker and it's an opiate.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Okay, it takes you off for heroin. But
well,
it's just like you're still out there running.
They didn't call it opiate during that time, but they want to put it as opiate now in this day and time.
Yeah, they call it the opiate a blocker. It takes your mind off of wanting to shoot dope.
Yeah.
You know?
It didn't take
my mind
off.
But now look at all these methanol maintenance. They call them, you're on methanol maintenance. Look at them.
Okay.
So have you ever seen, have you ever, they got the pop pills, Raheem, listen to me about this, shooting dope again. They got like three habits.
wait a minute, they got three habits now.
I'm sorry,
that's all right, that's what we, this is you know, we on a microphone system that, I mean, it needs to be you know, the system needs to be upgraded in terms of how we interact on the phone call. But that's fine. We're doing good.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to say this right here, because I have to be the advocate. Here's the thing. So the Vivitrol shot and the Suboxone does the same things as the methadone, but the adverse effects have lessened. So if you're not familiar or interacted with anyone who is participating in that program, it has a success rate and it has the endorsements of a lot of medical professionals. And then there are those in the recovery community who say that, like you guys say, it's one drug replacing another. They believe in total abstinence. And what I believe is, This is just my personal. What I believe is we need to get people's attention. And if we have to give them medication to get their attention long enough for them to decide that they don't no longer need the medication, that I think that's the way to go. Because if you take people's choices away from them, then they become rebellious. But rebellion helps people get clean and sober. Because look at Salim. He just told his story of rebellion. He rebelled. Salim disputes the idea that he's going to relapse. He just didn't grab. He just didn't buy into that. And I believe that it's because of his extreme views about things. When he does something, I find, my friend, that you do it all the way. When you was getting high. Yeah, you got high all the way. You ain't mess around, you know. And so the pathways are different now. And I believe is once we can get people's attentions by sharing our stories and the differences that are open to people to just stop and be substance free. That's a choice that people have to make, you know. You have to pay attention to your health. You know, some of the things you did, Salim, were healthy. I listened to you prescribe holistic things to me on the phone about what I should take for this. And, you know, you're very knowledgeable in that. And I believe it's because of your sobriety that you're even able to contemplate or entertain some healthy lifestyles. And same with Raheem. You said that your children, that was the wake-up call for you. Well, that's your methadone. You know, that's the path you took. Now, I've seen some of the outcomes of people in methadone maintenance. It's not good because we have a lot of friends that we can talk about later on that died as a result of continued substance abuse, even with the methadone maintenance. But there's some new things coming down the pike, and we're going to get a chance to open that up. But progress is certainly something that people who are looking to long-term recovery, progress is something that's really important. And we got a long way to go because all three of us have progressed from those kids on South 10th Street and Holland Street and in the playground. We have progressed a lot, in my opinion, because, you know, I can remember how we used to talk to little man a lot of times, you know, get your old dirty butt out of here. You know what I mean? Because little man would come around, and he was always a little dirty guy at one point, you know, until he started, he left and went to New York. Anybody remember anything, you know, good that, you know, I don't know, little man just had a hard life, and he died as a result of living that hard life in Harlem. He stayed over there until he. Yeah. You remember Kulak?
Yeah, little man. Yeah. I think I knew little man a little better because he was involved with my sister. But yes. Man, it's always been kind of rough on him, you know.
Yeah.
He ain't had no easy life, man.
Nah, he was short. I don't know.
Could be the, you know, because I mean his mother was a beautiful person. Yeah. And I don't know if I ever met his father.
No, I never. But met his father.
His father was never around. You know, like
yeah, father, yeah, father wasn't around. Yeah. You know, and he, you know, it's hard to say, you know, but after a while, his clothing attire got to be okay. That's because the young lady he was with can boost.
That's right.
That girl was going in and steal half of the store.
I know.
And dress him.
Yeah.
But we ain't gonna get into that.
No, that's another show we gonna. But
it was some good points about little man though. He was a good person. He was good hearted. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You know, he had his faults. Mm-hmm. Like we all.
Yeah,
do.
But you know, like you say. You know, little man was a real guy, man, that he also was had a similarity to myself that little man always, too, he went all in what he was doing.
And little man was
a lot like myself, man. You know, me and little man both been to jail and all of this other stuff, and we all used them drugs and everything like that, but little man was the kind of guy, he would never change his location.
Mm-mm. No.
He was the kind of guy, he kept hanging around the same guys that always wanted to get high. Mm-hmm. He never gave himself a chance.
Yeah.
And see, and that's what we're talking about, a chance to make progress. It has to start with oneself. Mm-hmm. And if you constantly be with the same people, you put in any medically induced program, guarantee you, if you go to a medically induced program and hang with your same friends, you gonna dip.
Yep.
Yeah, if you keep going to the barbershop, you're gonna get a haircut sooner or later, huh?
You have to change.
Association. But check this out. For all the listeners, you have to remember these three important things. People, places, and things.
Yeah.
That's what you got to get away from. Yeah. Some of the people, some of the places, and some of the things you're doing.
Yes, sir.
Just remember that. People, places, and things.
Yeah, I appreciate you
guys. You get that down pat, you'll be better off. Mm-hmm. Trust and believe that.
Okay. So we're getting ready to close out here. We got a couple of minutes. Any closing statements? Salim, you first.
Well, my thing is to the listening audience, I agree with what Raheem said, but my thing is too, man, people got their first man believe in themselves. You can't see a lot of people say, "Oh, I believe in God." How you believe in God? You don't believe in yourself. You got to first believe in self first and what self can do to help self make progress. It starts with oneself. He has to believe in himself, and he has to show himself that he can do what he says he can do. That's what he has to do. Prove to yourself and not no one else. Self first.
There you go.
Go ahead, Raheem. Go ahead, Raheem. You got a minute. Go ahead, bro.
Self-preservation is the first.
Let Raheem. Go ahead, Raheem.
And my thing is, I said it. People, places, and things. Get away from them places that always got drugs around it. Get away from people that's always got to use drugs and get high. And stop the things that cause you doing that causes you to want to get high, mm-hmm. you know. But you gotta, like Celine said, you gotta believe in yourself first. You can't believe in somebody and you don't even believe in yourself. You gotta do me, like you said. I'm gonna do me.
Yeah, do you, boo? Yeah. So my closing statement would be: if you can quit for a day, you can quit for a lifetime.
Yes,
okay,
sir.
So we're gonna close it out and I'll
again,
catch up with you guys.
That's true. Yeah. Again.
Yeah, yeah,
you're
yeah.
quitting for a day, uh-huh. that's because you believe that you can that's quit really, that day.
That's
and
right.
that's another starting point. One day,
yeah, yeah.
say I'm gonna do that.
Yeah.
Just like you said.
Yeah. So
one
we're gonna go ahead and play the closing song of Celine, one of your favorites. And I'll be talking to you guys on the other end. And the name of this is Sam Cooke's.
I was born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid.
My brother, if y'all can hear me, man, I got the big key.
Okay.
Right, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, because they're trying to call me. I got to vacate.
All right, have a good
day. I'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. Assalamu alaikum, my beloved brothers.
Assalamu alaikum.
God bless you.
A change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. I go to the movie. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother. I say, brother, help me, please. But he winds up knocking me.